Nico.
And I'm Jessica.
And this is the Always the Critic podcast, where a couple of friends review the latest movies, except we literally have zero qualification to do so. Jessica, we're not dead.
We're not dead. We're alive. I know that we've been gone for a few weeks, but, you know, we've had some stuff come up and life, and we were not watching movies either. Some weeks just didn't have any new releases, or was really thin on the ground in the theater, so we just didn't get out to see anything to review. So we didn't want to sort of waste our time reviewing something that we just weren't excited or passionate about. However, we have watched movies. Like, what have you been up to?
Movie-wise, okay. So in the times since we've had like a proper review of a last movie, which this was, even our Labor Day episode was looking top five
storm movies. Yeah,
exactly.
Because we had that hurricane that came, and yeah.
So what I've watched in that time, I can count it on one hand, baby. It's two movies only, pretty much.
What?
Yeah, it's been a month of me dragging my feet on certain things, and then starting a new position at work.
Yeah.
So getting used to the kind of the rhythm of all.
And you have a whole new schedule now. So.
Oh yeah, brand.
It's new been schedule. It's a lot of flux for us, I guess, yeah. in our real lives.
So one movie that I did see was Blue Beetle. This tells you how long ago this was.
What's your two sentence review of Blue Beetle?
Blue Beetle is a fun movie that has some similarities to like Ant-Man, but because of the Hispanic influence, like there's so much to draw to there. And it really sucks that the stars of the movie could not promote the movie, because it ultimately like bombed. Because of the fact that there was no promotion going into it. But that character will show up in the future, supposedly, according to James Gunn. And I would say for people to check it out, it's a fun family oriented like superhero movie, because you know, Hispanics are really close with their families, so family does play a large part. Funny. It's not like the greatest superhero movie ever, but it's still like a fun movie.
Okay, I like that caveat.
Yeah, so that's,
don't go into it thinking it's gonna be
right. You're not gonna go in thinking like, oh my god, I'm about to watch one of the greatest superhero movies of all time. No.
Right.
No. But still an enjoyable time at the movies.
Okay.
Check it out for sure. So that's one movie that I've watched. And then the other movie that I watched was actually a few days ago. It was A Haunting in Venice.
Oh, I watched this one too. Okay, so we can both kind of speak on this for a couple of minutes. So
yeah.
Haunting in Venice. I watched Death on the Nile a few years ago, and in Dolby for some odd reason.
Yeah.
Hateful. Hateful. Like, one of the worst movies. It's so bad.
That movie's bad.
It's terrible. So I had low expectations. And then, of course, I skipped out on Murder on the Orient Express, which is the first one.
That's the first one.
Skipped it entirely. So I had very low expectations for A Haunting in Venice. I found it was pretty good. That was not bad.
I'm in the same boat as you. I think that this one, because I've seen all three now.
Oh, okay.
All three Hercule Poirot movies, and this one was probably my favorite of the three. I guess because of the element, the supernatural element kind of thing.
Yeah, the faith versus happening. Science
exactly
stuff. Yeah,
fun stuff going on there. And overall, I'm not a big fan of like horror movies, and this movie isn't necessarily a horror movie, but there's like some aspects of like jump scares and stuff like that, that, you know, trying to do. I also saw it in Dolby for some reason.
Why did they give this movie in Dolby? And then there's a part, this isn't a spoiler, but at the beginning of the movie, they're introing the city of Venice, and they got these cool like shots of the birds and the plaza and all this stuff. And they have all these pigeons eating off the ground in this plaza.
Yeah.
And then they have this seagull who who's up on the roof of like a nearby building. And I literally didn't think anything of it. That was the first jump scare that like scared the shit out of me, because the seagull comes down and pounces on this little unsuspecting pigeon and starts ripping it to shreds. And I was like, oh my God. And then the seat vibrated too, because it's stupid Dolby. And I freaked out. I freaked out.
It's definitely a freak out for sure.
Yeah.
What they do to you there. But overall, again, like I said, probably my favorite of the three movies. That's not really saying a lot, because I think that the movies themselves are, they look good, like, on screen sometimes. Obviously, Kenneth Branagh, you know, loves directing these type of movies.
And with that accent coming in hot.
I know, coming in really hot with that accent. But
overall, can you do a French accent?
No. Okay, I'm not very good. I'm not very good with the French accents. Like, if I say something that's at least French, bonjour. And
Even then,
it doesn't really.
I don't know how Kenneth Branagh like makes it actually believable, because that's tonight, the least of the worries.
Like, he's
the
like,
least of the movie is me having issues with his accent. I think it's fine.
The mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So.
Why are we laughing so? Okay. But then my last movie that before we kind of get going on Dumb Money is I finally watched Elemental.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I did see that movie. I forgot
you
that
did?
I saw it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then what did you think of it?
Going into the movie, I thought it was going to be a, like, more of a love story, and it is in a sense, but the movie is more of the immigrant tale.
Oh, it is
than
yeah.
anything.
Yeah.
And yeah, I found it pretty enjoyable, kind of formulaic in a way in terms of the story.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, my if you're familiar with the immigrant tale, is what I really mean here is that you're kind of between a rock and a hard place, because do you follow in the steps of the family, you know, taking over the family business, not disappointing, or do you follow love, you know, and again, you know, against the family's wishes type of love.
So right.
These are tales that are kind of, you know, have been regurgitated many, many times over. It was fun to see an animated version, a unique animated version. Overall, I enjoyed myself during the movie.
Yeah, it was good. It was cute. I thought at the end, it was fine. It wasn't great. I don't think it was particularly memorable. I think I was expecting a little more of the world. I don't know. Maybe because I saw that promo so early.
Yeah.
Of her getting on the train.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And that being like kind of like, oh, wow, like what are they going to do with this? It wasn't like Zootopia level. Like world building, I guess.
Right, because Zootopia really goes in.
Right. But it was good. It was cute. I didn't think the love story was like that, like, good. Maybe there's just didn't have any chemistry. This is hard to say because they're just animated. Like,
right, they're animated like, and they don't have chemistry. That's such a hilarious sentence to say.
Anyway, that's just the vibe that I got.
Right.
Not to say that fire and water don't have chemistry. But yeah.
But in this case, they don't.
Anyway, so without further ado, we're going to get going on the actual reason why we're here. And that's to review Dumb Money.
Dumb Money. Yes. So let's go ahead and let's talk about it. But before we do, come check us out on our social. See, it's been a while since we've done this.
It's been a really long time since, yeah.
Because I'm all out of whack.
You're all out of whack.
Let's start again. If this is your first time listening, go ahead and subscribe to your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. And if you like us, go ahead and give us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars goes a long way for us.
Come and check us out on social media to stay up to date on everything that we're doing. You can find us on X, formerly Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Always Critic Pod. And if you're a fan, the best way to be a fan is to become a patron. It is such a great way for you to get involved and show your support and get a bunch of extra content. You can check out the page on patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. And we do want to shout out to our patrons, Curtis Bale, Cindy City, Alana Grace, Lorna Lee, Sammy, Caitlin, Michelle, Tan Mei, and new patron, Adya.
Welcome to the party.
Welcome. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us here at Always Critic Podcast. So today we are going to talk about the new movie called Dumb Money. Jessica, what is this about?
Sure. Dumb Money. IMDb synopsis reads, Dumb Money is the ultimate David versus Goliath tale based on the insane true story of everyday people who flipped the script on Wall Street and got rich by turning GameStop, yes, the mall video game store, into the world's hottest company.
All right. So now this movie itself is directed by Craig Gillespie. He has directed movies such as Lars and the Real Girl, I, Tonya, The Finest Hours, and Cruella. The movie was written by Lauren Shuker Blum, Rebecca Angelo, and Ben Mezrich, or Mezrich. And the movie stars Paul Dano, Pete Davidson, Vincent D'Onofrio, America Ferrera, Nick Offerman, Mahala Harold. I want to say it's Mahala Harold. Anthony Ramos, Seth Rogen, Sebastian Stan, Talia Ryder, Shailene Woodley, and rounding it all off, Dane DeHaan, which threw me off when I saw him, and Olivia Thirlby. All right, so how did this movie do with critics and box office?
Okay, so what happened was this has not opened in wide release yet. Evidently, we were one of the 8 theaters that got the movie.
How rare is that?
I don't know why. I saw it, and I was like, what? 8 theaters. I've never heard of such a thing.
That so. Never happens to us.
Never. You know, I know. I was excited though. So it made only $309,000 worldwide since this very limited release. It should get a wide release in a few days, basically next week.
Yeah. So next week, this movie will go wide in theaters, and then we'll see what the general perspective is on the movie. But in the meantime, critics, 84% critic score. We don't have an audience score, of course, because of the only 8 screens. But Dumb Money's crowd-pleasing dramatization of real-life stock hijinks may not tell the complete story, but it's rousingly entertaining nonetheless. So, Jessica, what are your thoughts on Dumb Money?
I thought it was really fun and kept me engaged throughout. I thought that it was basically the little brother to The Big Short.
Ah, nice. Okay, got it.
And I quite enjoyed it. It's sort of grim looking, I guess, in the cinematography. It's very sort of desaturated a lot of the time. I guess it feels very much like a pandemic movie.
It really does, because
it's set during the pandemic, exactly, which is when the story actually happened. But to see the world again of the pandemic, I was a little bit taken aback.
It really throws you for a loop. It's like, man, we already like escaped all of this.
Yes.
And here we are again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it throws you for a bit of a loop for sure.
But I think it's entertaining. And ultimately, it's an underdog story. Who doesn't love an underdog story? And yeah, it was good.
I will say that I enjoyed it. Let me ask you this question. You probably didn't, but I always like to ask this anyway. Did you participate at all in the movement of buying stocks at all?
No, absolutely not.
Got it. So,
yeah, I was more concerned with I'm on unemployment.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, that was my 2020.
That was your 2020.
And getting a new job versus trying to play the stocks on GameStop. No, that was not my concern.
Fair enough. So,
did you?
Yes. Now
you
I didn't do GameStop because I got to that one late. It was too late. It was already at a high price by the time I learned about Diamond Hands and
right.
But I did go to AMC. I bought stock in AMC.
I see.
And so me, my brother, and my mom all bought stock, and I remember that I pulled out because I needed money for something, and I pulled out just too soon.
Oh my God.
Because it went up quite a bit just before, like, when I cash out is when my mom and my brother really were able to take advantage. And then, like, my mom was the biggest winner of us all, like, being able to, I think she bought, like, I want to say it was like 50 shares of AMC stock. She bought it at like $5 each.
Oh my God.
And that sucker went up to like $55 a share. So my mom was the big winner there. And so we did participate in it. And so this movie does a lot of that, pretty much.
And it captures that frenzy.
Yeah, so yes, it does. It does capture the frenzy that was happening at that time. We were in the middle of it as well. My thoughts on the movie. I think the movie is very entertaining. It is of a moment.
It is. And there's something about it. Like, Anthony Ramos's character working in the GameStop as a quote-unquote essential worker.
Right. That is hilarious to me, by the way.
Which is hilarious. But him and being dissatisfied at his job and the boss telling him, oh, like, try and upcharge the customers on this and that. And him just being like, okay. Like, just that whole dissatisfaction with a regular job.
Yes.
Is something that I feel is new to this crop of post 2020 movies. And I'm sure that that's going to be further explored in more movies going forward, where you have this character that's just McFucking had it with this like crazy corporate oversight on a job that like is not that serious.
Yes. Yeah. So I think this is something that has been going on here. There's an entire Reddit page anti-work, and there's all these things of like people, like you said, unsatisfied with what's going on in their lives and how work treats them like a number. That's it.
Yeah, and you get replaceable.
Yeah, you're easily replaceable, and so why should I, you know, stick my neck out?
Right. Loyalty. Why?
Yeah, show loyalty when at a drop of a hat, the company could go through a change where I'm a number that's expendable, you know? So I understand this plight. I was, you know, I felt that.
Yeah.
In my own personal life, I have felt that. And yeah, so it is of a moment. Also, what feels of a moment, the movie really, really taps into what it was like in 2021 with the music.
Like, oh, this, yes, this, the needle the soundtrack. Drops.
The needle drops in this movie are very of a time. So, like, you have Humble by Kendrick Lamar. Mm-hmm. You have WAP by Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, among other, like, songs of that time. And so this movie is going to feel really dated really soon, like really fast.
But I think it's meant to
it
be.
It has to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has it's to. Trying to place you in this time back in this few years ago.
Yeah, I know. It was just, man, it's so crazy how this movie had such a fast turnaround.
That's
the crazy thing to me.
It did.
It was fast.
Incredible how fast they developed this and got so many interesting, cool actors to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of them understood how big of a phenomenon this GameStop stock was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember like how big of a deal, like you would hear about it everywhere.
The GameStop,
Diamond Hands, Apes, and all this like, you know, lingo that was going around that now like people look back and it's so stupid how you look at it, because it was coming from a group of people that were making memes out of it. It was
right, the internet culture. That was another big part of the movie, was they had TikToks and Reddit threads and different things sort of plastered throughout as sort of like transitional pieces. You know, and back in the day, in like maybe Hitchcock's era, you had like newspapers that would like flash up on the screen to kind of tell a bit of the story.
Yeah.
And nowadays, we don't have newspapers coming up like into frame to show a big piece of exposition. You have TikToks and, you know, some news, bits of news broadcasts and Reddit threads. And it's interesting to see this sort of dredged up for the movie.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of the things is that I remember some of those videos.
Right.
Or some of those memes. Like, I remember them in real time.
Right.
Because I would, like, be on social media and I would see these things and I'd be right. like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah.
And people, like, you know, hold and, like, all the memes surrounding that. It's insane, like, everything that happened. So let's talk about the performances a bit here. So what'd you think of the lead performance, Paul Dano?
It's fine. I didn't think it was anything groundbreaking. I think Paul Dano is a little bit frightening. He's precious in this movie. He's very sweet and nice and endearing. And I wanted to protect him because every time he went live on Twitch or whatever that was, the people that were commenting on his videos are just absolute trash. Like, they're just trolls. And he's trying to, like, field these crazy comments while also engaging with the people that are actually watching his videos. And I just felt terrible for him. Paul Dano did a good job. But I honestly, personally, I can't divorce Paul Dano from, like, he's really outlandish and scary in some of the other roles that I've seen him in.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing about Paul Dano. Paul Dano is, as an actor, he can be a lot. And in this movie, he's kind of subdued. Really.
Yeah, he's very subdued. Yeah.
He's subdued based on what else we've seen him in. I mean, this man has been the Riddler recently.
Right.
He was the creepy guy in Prisoners. So when he takes on a role like this, it's a little refreshing to see that he could play something that's
not. He was mute in Little Miss Sunshine. Do you remember that?
Like, yes, he went, I remember. And then he had the freak out.
Yeah.
Because he found out he was colorblind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the freak out.
Yeah, Paul Dano's had some really interesting roles in his career, and he's sort of built it up to that. And now he's sort of taking a back seat and doing these like very quiet characters. And I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, if that makes any sense. Like, I'm waiting for like Paul Dano to show up.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Like, out of nowhere, something's going to happen where
right.
he's going to go full crazy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you mean.
So he's off-putting to me, but I think he did well enough, really well in this movie.
Outside of Paul Dano, we have a huge cast pretty much for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody stands out. Maybe Pete Davidson, because he's always
Pete Davidson is the best. Okay, Pete Davidson is the best part of this movie.
I think he is.
Followed by Anthony Ramos, followed by Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
Then Sebastian Stan.
yo, Sebastian Stan in this movie. Like, what he's doing in this movie is just... I couldn't stop laughing, dude.
I know, like, the styling that they put for him.
And the way he tries to speak. Oh my God, it's so funny. It is really funny. But yeah, Ramos is really good. Pete Davidson steals pretty much every scene he's in.
Oh my God, I know.
Scene stealer.
Him eating the DoorDash food is nightmare fuel. Oh my
God, yes,
it is. That's like my worst nightmare. That's a first world problem, I get it, but.
That's the worst thing.
It's heinous.
Oh my God, yes, it is. It's heinous. And then he's doing it in his, I guess, brother's car.
Yeah, he like stole the car,
without asking to use the car. Oh my goodness, he's insane. Okay, so overall, I think acting performances are pretty fine. Nothing that really truly stands out. Shailene Woodley really gets a nothing role here. She's a wife.
A wife.
Supportive wife, and that's pretty much it.
Well, wife of the year, as a matter of fact, because of the amount of trust that she has
in
her man like make this right.
That is a lot of trust to have.
Oh my gosh.
So, anything you want to say before we get into spoilers?
No. Let's get into spoilers.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and talk spoilers for Dumb Money right after this.
The greatest trick.
Houston, we have a problem.
I am the father.
I see dead people.
The devil ever pulled.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Was convincing the world.
You can't handle the truth.
He didn't exist.
What's in the box?
All right, let's go ahead and talk spoilers for Dumb Money.
Is this a Florida movie?
Ooh, great question. Except for the fact that even though it mentions Miami, Florida, it's clearly not Miami, Florida. No, it's not a Florida movie.
It's not a Florida movie.
No, it's not.
Even though they have these scenes, like they have neighbors.
Yeah, but
right. Seth Rogen's neighbors are having a party in the middle of a pandemic, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!"
I mean, yeah, that's very Florida.
Yeah,
but it's not filmed in Florida. It's so obvious. It was California, wherever they were in California, because there's no property that is that on the water.
What are you talking about? Like in Miami?
That on the way it's positioned, because if you look at it, it's not like. Beach.
You don't think it's intercoastal?
No, not even.
You don't think it's
intercoastal? No, I don't think it's intercoastal, because even a property like that, it looks like it's almost like elevated above the water. It looks like almost like cliff-like, almost. And there's no property in South Florida.
Okay, I just assumed it was on one of those little islands.
No, because even the islands are not like that. Because the islands... Because I know exactly what type of islands you're talking about.
Yeah, like Star Island. Yeah, and Star Island.
No, they're not positioned that way.
Not even in like, I was thinking it was intercoastal. Also,
but intercoastal, you would still be able to see like land on the other side. Think about it. Intercoastal, you're not really facing the ocean on intercoastal.
Right.
So you would be able to see, you know, like across, and you would see like land. Over.
I get it.
Yeah, this was filmed in California.
Easily. Okay.
But right. No, it's not a Florida movie. And the thing is that it doesn't really make use too much of its surroundings. They tell you where they are, but it's not like they're like really like emphasizing the places that there are, because like, you know, he's up in Massachusetts, but it's really just a house. And then, you know, down in Miami, but you're in the inside of all these different mansions, really. So it's not like you're taking use of the space or the city. I do like in the movie, I do like that it follows multiple people and their journey.
I do too, only I didn't like the college stuff.
Oh, okay. Why didn't you like it? I thought
that was just a huge weak link for me.
Okay.
Yeah, just, I can't. How do I put this? It was because the stories that are juxtaposed against all of the billionaires and millionaire hedge fund people.
Yeah.
These are the underdogs.
Yes.
I didn't necessarily think that a college student with student debt, which is like so many kids, like there's this isn't so like unique,
not unique
to these two students.
Okay.
And I didn't necessarily think that having some Gen Zers in the mix was compelling to me.
Gotcha.
Everything was like a joke. Everything was like, oh, we'll just like do this. And then they were suddenly super invested, no pun intended, in the, you know, outcomes of GameStop. And I was just like, could do without it.
Could do without it. Okay. Gotcha.
Because I like America Ferrera's stuff. I love Anthony Ramos. And then you have these two college girls and you're like, okay, like in between having fun and taking like Zoom classes not seriously, you're over here like fucking around on the on the stock exchange. Like I was like, why are we here?
I mean,
I don't care.
I wonder what it is on top of that. Is it the privilege? Maybe
there's something about it that's like ungrateful.
Interesting.
Like yes, you have student debt, but also you're graduating with a fucking degree.
True, but like they're gonna graduate with $100,000+ of debt.
Yeah, I mean,
doing it, so like
I get it. And they had the whole story.
That's relatable to
some. I get it. I get it. I'm not into it.
So
I don't know.
People going through student debt does nothing for you.
Sorry about it. I mean, I get it. I get it. It's everywhere. It's rampant.
Yeah. And the
maybe it has just something to do with their attitude.
Huh. Interesting.
And it's not, I don't know. Because I heard the whole sob story from one of the girls who was like, my dad went out of business and we got bankrupt and all this stuff. They don't care. And they, you know, I heard it. I hear it.
And it was.
I don't care.
Wow. Okay. No, it's
Tough to say, but like, that just didn't resonate with me.
That's fair. That's fair if it doesn't resonate. Like that one out of all the stories probably was the didn't resonate with me most either. Like it was just
okay
on the bottom for of you the list, didn't. But I'm not gonna sit here and be like I didn't care. Like I still found like damn, like that student debt is like ridiculous. And I've heard horror stories in real life where I don't have student debt because like I paid my way through school. So that part is a little tougher on me, but I understand it from tons of friends and tons of people who are currently going through that student debt. And it is ridiculous how like the interest rates are.
It's like, predatory.
Yeah. It's predatory and everything just to get a college degree.
Yep.
So even if you do graduate, but nowadays, you know, graduating with a bachelor's doesn't mean shit,
mm-hmm.
you know? So when you said, oh, they're graduating with a degree, the degree means nothing nowadays. Like,
I still don't care.
That's fine. I'm just saying.
And don't like, get a degree. Go to a technical college. To me, it's like, why go to college if you don't really care and you don't want the degree and it doesn't mean anything to you?
Well, it doesn't mean anything in the real world. It's not that it doesn't mean anything to you.
Okay, again, why are they this is like a whole tangent that we're going on.
It is. It's just, yeah, just
they didn't take it seriously. Like they just like didn't seem to value it anyway.
I mean, a college student who's a freshman or sophomore, you know, starting college, that's going to happen.
They like, weren't. They were starting college.
They were like 19.
She said she had 100-something in student debt. When you're just starting, you don't have that much.
I don't know how the debt works on
okay.
college debt. So
sorry.
But
that to me was like junior senior.
Okay, junior
senior. But okay.
Still like Nothing.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just because of where I am now, like I'm around really high performing students who do well. And like, I just didn't. I was like, okay.
Okay. All right.
Fine.
Cool. Jessica doesn't care about college.
I hope they do well. I hope well for them, but.
Yep. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
When it comes to the villains of the movie, so we'll look at D'Onofrio, Rogan. Why am I calling him Ben Swanson? It's not his real name.
No, it's Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman and Sebastian Stan. How do you think the movie kind of treated them in terms of villainy? I don't think the movie is harsh on them.
No, it's not that harsh on them.
It's not.
They're just eccentric.
That's it.
But that's it. That's all they are. They're just eccentric and they have the money to do whatever the fuck they want. And that's, you know, if I had that much money, I would be the same way. I'd get a fucking pet pig and I would like live wherever the hell I wanted and like rent out a tennis court because of whatever. I mean, it was just very eccentric and they had a lot of privilege.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the way they spoke about, you know, what they did during the pandemic, like,
right,
you know, moving
right.
their offices so they could stay open and all right. that stuff.
That was a crazy line. Like, who closes their business during a pandemic?
Right. That was a
because the government who closed it was like who closes who, their business because the government tells them to.
Yeah, exactly. That was a crazy.
And
line.
I was like, at the same time, I'm very distrustful of the government. So I was like, you know what? Like, I feel that like they had the means
to
work
it.
Around it, and they just did. Like, it's not even a thing.
Yeah, and Florida became that haven for a lot of people and lot of companies.
Oh, yes.
We know because we're in Florida. So, yes, but I don't think...
it was just kind of comical.
Comical, but the movie wasn't tough on them at all.
No.
Maybe Sebastian Stan with, like, the way... Like, at first, the way he was presenting himself as a character, like... seemed eccentric, but then it just came off as super lame and super like rehearsed. Everything felt like he was just trying to get a script going.
Well, it wasn't until the very end of the movie that you kind of saw how they pulled their weight and their strings to get the best script writers, to get the best consultants for handling their Congress hearing.
Yep.
And you can see, again, this is like a study in juxtaposition because the whole movie was doing this. But at the very end, you see how, you know, if he's just running his questions through his wife and his brother and his like friend. And that's it. He didn't have this whole team. He didn't have any professionals that he hired. It was very much an underdog story through and through.
The entire thing was an underdog story. Any other like plot points or anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I think the bailout was a little, I mean, not rushed, but when they bail out Seth Rogen, it was just like a matter of him calling them up and saying like, I'm looking for new investors. And they're like, how much do you need? Whatever.
Yeah, it was very quick.
It was very quick. And then it wasn't until I think America Ferrera said, oh, like another bailout. And I was like, oh, so that was what that was.
Yeah, because
I didn't put a name to it. I was just like, oh, they're
bailing him out.
Yeah, but I just him out. They're yeah.
They made an emphasis on it earlier in the conversation when Nick Offerman and Seth Rogen, they finished playing tennis, and Seth Rogen talks about, oh, my uncle never borrowed, and like it was like a proverb that he said. When he started his own business. So that's why Seth Rogen wasn't taking any money from Nick Offerman. Like, Offerman was trying to get in the game with him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when he said, like, he gave the whole proverb of the uncle, like he never took a cent from anyone to, you know, owe. And, you know, Offerman laughed it off at that point. And then finally later on, it becomes evident. It's, you got to think about the movie, like you got to remember that conversation happened. So it's not very clear. I will agree with you. But it's one of those things where you think back, oh, that conversation they had at the tennis court now makes sense, connecting with the bailout that just happened. So, yeah, I think the movie kind of, it moves at a good pace, but then I feel like that ending feels kind of rushed, like it rushes through everything with Congress.
Yeah, it's very fast. And I don't know, like, I didn't watch any of those proceedings, and to this day haven't seen any of it, so I don't know if it was really that fast, because it seems like he only had 5 minutes or something.
Yeah, he only had 5 minutes to give like his own oral testimony,
right?
Which
feels... And then I don't know how long the cross examination was, like how long they were asking him questions. It was very like, I don't know, it's strange.
Yeah, it was a strange way to end the movie. Well, not stranger than how it actually ended. Having Paul Dano and Pete Davidson run naked on screen.
Yeah. That was probably
the stranger way to end the movie.
And I almost was expecting it.
Because they talked about it so much.
They had talked about it so much, of running with your dick out in the storm or in the rain or something.
Yeah, they did mention it. So, you know, it was Chekhov's run.
Yeah. Yes, it was. It was, because they just had to do it, okay? It was definitely a Chekhov's gun thing.
Yeah, it was. Chekhov's gun, Chekhov's. Yeah.
Oh my God. I think the most satisfying ending was Anthony Ramos, who said that he was like, no, I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not going to open at the ass crack of dawn. No, I don't think I'm going to do anything. And then he was like, oh, so you're quitting. And he's like, no.
No. No. And it was satisfying to see that he had gotten money from it. Like, he cashed out half, mm-hmm. kept the other half to yeah. see. And doing that stupid dance.
The stupid dance. Anyway, I liked Anthony Ramos' story the best, I guess. But I really appreciated all of the epilogue that we got to read after they did the Chekhov's run. And we got to see that he cashed out. By he, I mean Paul Dano's Keith Gill cashed out at $34 million.
Yep. That's insane. Insane. But
man, I couldn't believe awesome. That they showed him. I thought he was going to cash out, right? And then they showed him clicking that he wanted 50,000 more shares.
Yeah.
You know, buy more shares into GameStop. I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
I was shocked. So anyway, then they said that, oh, he's like receded from the public life and he's a millionaire.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest controversy out of this movie is the fact that, or not the movie, but the real story is the fact that they paused like buying the stock.
That was the thing that I thought they were going to dwell on more.
I wish they would have.
Because that was a huge thing.
That was the big part.
I was shocked that they had done that.
Yeah, they paused buying and selling. Robinhood was a major factor in that, where they paused and like you couldn't do anything with the stock for mm-hmm. like a while, and people were freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Wall Street Bets site getting taken down as yeah. well.
Yeah, I thought that was going to have some sort of different outcome as well, that we were going to delve into who's at fault and why this happened and
how to get back up. I would have loved more of that part.
Yeah.
Because I think the rise is interesting enough, but once you get to the point of like, oh, now everybody's taking notice, what's the downfall of that? What's the consequences? What are the actions or reactions of that?
Mm.
And I don't think we got enough of that part.
Sure. I don't know why Vincent D'Onofrio was in the movie.
I mean, I guess. But it, just one of those shadow investors pretty much that came in. So they had to put a face to that investor that was going to help out the company that Seth Rogen ran.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it was kind of a useless part.
Yeah.
Even Nick Offerman's part is somewhat useless as well.
Yeah, like they, you know.
Because they show him a lot of times, but it's kind of like it's a character that's just waiting for a certain part of the point of the story to come through for him to actually be integral into it. He's not really integral into anything except for the moment that Seth Rogen needs help. I would say overall this movie is fun. The clear comparison type of movie to it would be something like The Big Short. Talking
that's
about
how I figured out what everything is called and the happenings of the stocks and whatnot and shorting something. I was like, clue. If I had not watched The Big Short, I would have no idea
what shorting a stock would be or anything like that. Yeah. Or short squeeze or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad that I watched that movie for the first time not that long ago as well. It's crazy to me that you can still make money on stocks by shorting it, by betting against it.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. But then again, like,
it's gambling.
It's gambling. It's kind of like
sports. It's legalized gambling. Yeah.
Right. You can bet against the team winning a game. So why can't you bet against the stock, you know, losing?
Yeah.
So crazy. But that's how the market works nowadays.
Yep.
But what I will say is that it's really cool. It's really good to see that the stock market kind of learned their lesson and they're like, yeah, we're not going to short as many.
They're things. Very cautious now. Yeah.
Because a something more could come out of nowhere and be like, start squeezing.
Well, I just don't think that social media had as much of a play on the stock market like it does now.
Yeah. You're right about that. Now.
And that nothing's a secret. Like, people are constantly.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, you're learning all this stuff all the time through social media because people are like putting out their own experiences and teaching people, hey, this is what I did. And, you know, this is how you can do it type of thing.
Yeah.
Something. And it spreads like that in a blink of an eye. Snap
it's
of
so
a finger.
Quick. And so I just think it was so insulated that, you know, the industry and Wall Street was so insulated against sort of the 21st century post 2015 rise of social media. And Paul Dano's like Keith Gill just sort of was in the right place at the right time. He had enough of a following and people were just like, stick it to the man. And he jumped on board this GameStop thing, which to me is wild that he saw something in the stock.
Yeah.
To begin with.
That is true.
He was like, I just like the stock. I was like, okay.
Okay, cool.
Do you?
And then people just latched onto it.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing, too, is what he was saying. He's like, we don't even know how the stock exchange works. This is all speculative. Like, if people feel a certain way and they start buying a stock, that doesn't necessarily mean that the company is in dire straits or vice versa.
Right.
Or if the company is doing great financially, it means people just like it's all like on a whim.
Yeah, it's all on a whim.
It's all on a whim.
Because if you look at GameStop for real, like if you walk into a GameStop store,
you're like,
like this is a dying business.
This is a relic. Yeah.
You know, but like people took interest in the stock itself. And then the valuation went up. Doesn't mean that the company's good now. It's just
No,
the company's probably even worse than when the movie like took place 2 years later. But you know,
it's so interesting. I could never. I'd be like with ulcers day in and day out. Like I'd just be super stressed in that world.
I feel bad for America Ferrera's character.
Oh my god, she held too long.
Yeah, she held too long, and she's still holding apparently.
Oh my gosh.
Feel bad for her.
I feel terrible for her. She should have sold.
She should have sold. But that happens sometimes. That happens sometimes. All right. Well, what did you give this movie on a
B?
Yeah, I was settling on a B as well.
Yeah.
So
very enjoyable.
Very enjoyable.
Mostly because of Pete Davidson.
Yes.
My favorite line was when he said, they were talking at the dinner table. They were telling the parents that they are now millionaires.
Right.
$23 million, I think, was the pot at that point. And they were like, you're posting your statements online. Like, they could come after you. They could want the baby.
Yeah.
Pete Davis is like, nobody wants that baby.
Nobody wants that baby. Oh, my
God. I died. And then I think the other part that I died was during the congressional hearing when Paul Dano says, oh, my mom was a registered nurse. And he goes, that's you, mom.
Yeah.
From the other room.
Pete screams Davidson, it. Bro. Pete Davidson. He was really good in the movie.
I think this also, I don't think we mentioned this, but this version of Pete Davidson, the character that he plays, is the version that I think everyone thinks Pete Davidson is. Like, he's just like insane, driving around, eating other people's food because he's got the munchies. He's constantly on drugs. Like, that is the version of Pete Davidson that I have in my mind. And then they just played right into it.
They played right into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And then he gets a car. He gets rewarded.
At the end. Yeah.
But that is funny.
What was that, a Lambo?
I can't remember. I couldn't point it out. It didn't look like your typical, like, Lamborghini Murcielago.
True.
It's not like one of those, but maybe it was a different type. So.
Anyway.
So
I think he said Lambo earlier, so that's why I thought.
Yeah, because
they probably got him a Lambo.
Get a Lambo or something. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe he got it for him. Maybe he got it for him. So yeah, overall, dumb money, enjoyable movie. I would say check it out whenever you get a chance, type of thing.
When it's finally available in your region.
Exactly. Once it finally comes out. Next week, I believe we're going to be talking about, it's called The Creator, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Gareth Edwards sci-fi movie.
It's only taken forever for Gareth Edwards to come out with another movie because what's it been since Rogue One? No,
good
right?
Lord, no, it couldn't have been that long.
No,
do you think he's done? He's got to have done something in between.
Are you looking it up? Should I do it?
If you want to look it up right now,
okay.
Because I don't like. He's got to have done something since.
I don't think so. Hold on.
Wow.
No I'm going way. To IMDb now.
That's insane to me. Gareth Edwards, who had so much promise going
into
it.
Hold on, this
it.
Is like visual effects director.
Yeah.
It's literally only...
Wow.
Rogue One was the last thing he directed.
That's insane.
Before that, Godzilla. Before that, Monsters.
Yeah, he should have already done something since then, so...
Rogue One was 2016.
Yeah, it was. I remember that.
Wow.
All right. I didn't know. Then we'll see what he has created with this new sci-fi.
Hope it's good.
I hope it's good too. So if this is your first time listening to us, thank you for checking us out on this episode. You can always find us on your favorite podcast app, always The Critic Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. Find us on our socials. You can find us on X, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Always Critic Pod. And then lastly, if you're a fan, go ahead and consider becoming a patron. It's a great way for you to get involved and show your support. So go ahead and check us out on patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. And that has been our episode. I'm Rico.
And I'm Jessica. And this has been the Always the Critic Podcast.